Good evening. It is good to see everyone here this evening. It's been a good day. And tonight's question night. I think people seem to like the question night. I've gotten a lot of questions about when is question night going to be? Well, question night's tonight. And as I mentioned last Sunday, we have two questions that we're going to try to tackle tonight. Last time I went for three and we didn't make it. So I backed off a little more realistic goals tonight and maybe trying to cover these two questions. Before we begin, as I mentioned last time, there are a couple of disclaimers for question night that have to be noted. And that is, there's a lot of questions that can be asked. And there's a lot of questions that just can't be answered. There's not answers for every question that we might have. But one day, Lord willing, if we live like we should and go to heaven, we can ask those questions. And there's an answer for them. I just maybe don't have it. And nobody else here on earth has it. Second thing is that not all the answers matter. There's a lot of questions that we might have out there that are just interesting things that we'd like to know about that just don't make any difference what the answer is. And hopefully, while those might be fun to think about, we won't spend a lot of time on questions of that nature. And then thirdly, as we humans sit here and try to reason out the answers to questions, I think I stated it last time, saying we have to know our place. And that is that we might not be able to discover the answer. And if that's the case, then that doesn't mean there's not an answer or it's not right or we shouldn't do it or we should. It just means we don't know the answer. We still need to do what God tells us to do. Well, last time I mentioned the two questions. The first question stated, I guess this is probably exactly how it was written on the question card. And for those of you who maybe this is the first time you've been here, we put a question box out and you can submit your questions and we tackle those questions one night. We try to do it once a month. It's been once every 2 months now. So this is not a what does Adam think time. This is the let's open our Bible and see what the Bible has to say about these questions. And if we can come to some conclusion, then maybe we can grow because of that. So that's what we're going to do tonight. First question is, can you please compare 1 Peter 3:21 and Noah's salvation? Parenthetically, it says, people say it was the ark that saved them, not the water. Well, that's pretty logical, isn't it? Noah and his family would not have been saved had it not been for the ark. They got in the ark and they were delivered from the flood that Noah brought on the earth. I mean, that God brought on the earth because they got in that ark. 1 Peter 3:21 is where this is found. And I want to start off by saying there's a lot of analogies in the Bible. There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of parables that the Lord teaches with. And it's very important to understand that all these don't have to be perfect. They're not perfectly associated. Every single aspect of every single story, every single parable does not have a deeper meaning. Sometimes it's just part of the story. A good example of that would be when we hear about the 99 sheep and the one sheep that's gone astray. And what happens? The shepherd, who is the Lord, goes out and finds that one lost sheep. And the Bible says he leaves the 99 and goes and finds that one. Are we to assume that every time somebody strays, that the Lord leaves us completely and goes and finds that person and only comes back to us once that person? Well, no. The point of that is that the Lord cares for every single soul. Every single one of them. And what that is showing is his care and his desire to have everyone in the fold. Doesn't mean he neglects the rest of the fold. So it's important that as we look at these analogies or these parallels or these parables, that we not try to just maybe overthink them too much. Now, having said that, I don't think that's the case with 1 Peter 3:21. I think this is just as close to a perfect parallel that we can get. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 21, it says, "There is an antitype which now saves us, namely baptism, not the removal of filth from the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience towards God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ." There's an antitype that saves us, and it's baptism. And that water saves us. Turn back, if you would, to Genesis, the 6th chapter. I want to look at Noah as he prepares for the destruction of the world in its entirety. I want to look at what was going on at the time and the situation as it was around him. In Genesis 6, beginning in verse 5, "The Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, 'I will destroy man who I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry I have made them.' But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." Drop down to verse 11. "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their ways on the earth. And God said to Noah, 'The end of flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them. I will destroy them, the earth.'" And he goes on to say, "Make yourself an ark." And then in verse 23 of chapter 7, "So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping things and birds of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive." So we see here a bad situation. The earth was evil. Everyone was corrupt. And then there's Noah. And he found grace in the sight of God. And so God prepared him for what was to come. And Noah, obeying God, prepared the ark and entered into the ark and was spared. Now turn back to 1 Peter 3. And this time I want to back up to verse 18 and start there. "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit, by whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison who formerly were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, 8 souls, were saved through water. There is an antitype which now saves us, namely baptism, not the removal of filth from the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience towards God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God, angels and authorities, power, having been made subject to him." Here it says they were saved by water. But wait a minute. They got on the ark and that's what saved them, right? Which one is it? As we read this in 1 Peter, what is the key word? Especially here in verse 20. What is the key word? "Who formerly were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is 8 souls, were saved through water." Is the key word there water? No. The key word is souls. The key word has to do more with the eternal than the temporal there, doesn't it? God cares, and if you open your Bible and you read through your Bible and you read through it from cover to cover, I'm going to tell you what you're going to find. God cares more about your soul than than he does about anything else, and especially more than he cares about your life. You're going to find that true throughout the Bible. In Matthew 10 and verse 28, we read, don't fear him who can kill the body. But what? Fear him who has the ability to kill the eternal soul. That's who we need to worry about. We don't need to worry about the person who can harm us physically. God cared about Noah's soul. He cared about Noah's family's soul, and he saved it. And I can just see God looking down into this evil world. And then there's this one shining light. There's Noah, his servant Noah, and his family. And all this evil is just pressing in on them from every side. You ever felt that way before? You may have, depending on where you might be and who might be around you. But all this influence is just, it's got to be pushing on Noah. And then God saved them. He saved their lives. That's just kind of incidental. But he saved their soul. God purged their life of the influence that was all around them. Through water, he washed the earth clean from sin. I think truly water saved Noah and the seven souls that were with Noah. And water saves us today. It purifies and it cleanses us just as God cleansed the earth from all that sin. 1 Peter 3:21 tells us it's not the removal of filth from the flesh. But you know what it tells us? It's removal of filth from the soul. That's what it says. And the flood was not about saving flesh. It was about saving souls. And that's what God did. Now, since we're here, I want to just ask a question. Was there anything magical about the floodwaters that cleansed the earth? No. Was there anything magical about this water behind me that we might baptize with? No. Was there anything spectacular about the ark, the vehicle that God used? Nothing special. It was just normal wood made by man. Is there anything special about the vehicle that God uses today, whether it's me or Gene or another Christian that assists somebody in salvation? There's nothing special about that too. It's what's behind it. It's the power of God. And by the power of God, the flood came. And eight souls were saved. And by the power of God, baptism was given, and we have the same opportunity. We have to make that choice, though. And Ken, when he was here, said that he sometimes gave the invitation at the beginning, and that threw people off. And this is not an invitation. I'm not going to give an invitation. So don't start singing here in just a second. But it's a really good opportunity to think about these things. We don't have to make that choice. We don't have to. And in the days of Noah preached to the people and tried to get them to change their ways. And they didn't. And they perished. And now today, God speaks to us through His Word and tries to get us to change our ways. And you know what? If you know the truth, if you've been told the truth, if you understand the truth, and you just say, no, not what I'm going to do. You're the exact same as the people back in the day of Noah that mocked Noah for building the ark and that kind of thumbed their nose at God and truth and righteousness. And what's even more sad about that is your destiny is the same as theirs, destruction. And I'm not talking about your life. I'm talking about your soul. Okay, the second question that we had was a compilation of several questions, actually. So I kind of formed it into my own question here, I guess. And the question really has to do with going places where sin's going on and maybe not taking part in that sin, but being there and being counted among those people. And so the question is this. This is how I worded it. If I'm not going to blank, why can't I go to blank? If I'm not going to drink, why can't I go to the bar and just hang out? If I'm not going to gamble, why can't I go to the racetrack or the casino and just hang out? If I'm not going to participate in things maybe that go on at prom or dances or whatever, why can't I just go? What's wrong with that? I think those are some good questions. Going to a place where sin is going on but not sinning. Is that possible? Can we do that? Is that something that we can participate in? Now, I want to tell you, first of all, I think we need to be real careful where we go and what we do. I think that says a lot about us, a lot about who we are, a lot about what we are. But the first thing I want to tell you is this. I'm not here to tell you where you should and shouldn't go. I'm not your daddy. I got 3 kids I got to do that with, okay? I'm not here to tell you where you can and can't go. But as that is your decision to make, I hope that you'll think about some things. I hope that you will come to that decision with the consideration of what God has to say in His Word. And I hope that you'll put your desires and what you really want aside and look at His will. And I'm going to tell you what, if you have the right heart, you'll be guided to do the right thing in these matters. I think there's 3 things to consider when we're thinking about a place. Are we going to go here? Are we going to be part of this? Are we going to attend something where sin is going on? Even if we don't, I think we need to consider 3 things. First of all, the place. Second of all, the people who are there. And third, what's going on there? Let's ask those 3 questions. The place, where is it? Where are we talking about going? Some places just scream sin, don't they? You know, I think of a restaurant that we used to eat at. It was good food. I mean, it was good food. And then one day, they changed the slogan on the sign, and it said, "Dining, drinking, and debauchery." Well, we didn't go there anymore. That kind of screams sin, doesn't it? We stopped going there. They had the best shrimp you can imagine. It's awesome. But we didn't go there anymore. Places like Bourbon Street. Does that sound like a place a Christian ought to be? Bourbon Street. No. You know, there's enough sin out there that's just lurking in the shadows. Why would we choose to go to places that just scream sin, that just say, "Come on in, debauchery, bourbon, come on in and we'll just carry you straight off to hell. That's what we'll do with you." Turn to Genesis 13. How about a place like, we've mentioned, you know, my restaurant that I don't get to go to anymore. We've mentioned Bourbon Street. How about Sodom and Gomorrah? How about that? Does that place scream sin to you? It ought to. We read enough about it in the Bible. And here we see Lot as he makes a decision about a place he's going to go. And if you remember, there was strife between Lot's herdsmen and Abram's herdsmen. And it finally came to this culmination of having to say, we gotta split up this land so that there's not a battle. In Genesis chapter 13, in verse 8, we read, "So Abraham said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren.'" Then drop down in verse 10. "And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere. It's before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. Lot looked on the land, and it was beautiful. It was green grass. It was like the garden. Beware. It sparkles in the cup, and it goes down easy. But it bites like a serpent. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Those two things there. Lot made a choice. Lot chose to go to a place. Now, let me just ask you this. Do you think in Lot's day, he understood what Sodom and Gomorrah were all about? Do you think he got that? You think he understood that? I guarantee you he knew what those were about. And I guarantee you what he said is, that's the land for me, and I'm not going to get involved in this Sodom and Gomorrah stuff. We're going to talk about him a little bit later, because we all know that didn't turn out very well for Lot, did it? What about the people who were there? 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 tells us that evil companions corrupt good morals. Who you make your friends will determine who you truly are. And somebody might say, well, my friends are there, and I just want to be with my friends, and I'm not going to partake in the sin that's going on. All right, I'm going to play parent for just a second. What if your friends hung out in Sodom and Gomorrah? Is that okay to go there? What if your friends were parts of a cult and they hung out with those folks? Is it okay to go there? It's just, you're not going to be part of it now. You're just going to hang out with your friends. What about if they went and they hung out with Satan worship? I'm not going to be part of that, but I'm going to go hang out with my friends. Does that make any sense? Now, surely anybody can grant me, excuse me, that in these extreme cases, it's just not right to go do that, right? Surely anybody would say that. What about Paul? What if his friends hung out with idol worshipers and he's just going to go be with his friends, but he's not going to be part of that? Well, this is kind of extreme, but here's the point. The point is, you got to draw a line somewhere. You got to determine where you're going to draw that line. And that's an individual decision, but let me tell you something. Let me tell you where God draws the line. He draws the line at sin. That's where He draws the line. So now you determine where you're going to draw the line. You know the benchmark. You know where God stands. Now you determine where you're going to stand. Maybe this is the case of us needing to assess who our friends really are. We mentioned Paul. Every time in the Bible, after Paul's conversion, that his friends are mentioned, you know they're mentioned in the Lord. Who did Paul make his friends? Paul made people who thought like he thought, believed like he believed, loved the Lord like he loved the Lord. That's who he made his friends. That's who Paul was with. Do your friends or your colleagues or the people that you want to be around, do they respect you for not condoning some things that maybe they are okay with doing? Do they even know that you don't condone it? We need to be careful who our friends are, because that's going to determine ultimately who we are. What's going on there? This place that we're talking about going. What's going on there? Well, it doesn't matter. What matters is what I'm going to be doing. What's going on there? What was Saul doing at the stoning of Stephen? Doesn't matter. Saul didn't throw a stone. Acts 8 tells us that as he stood there and he watched those men's coat, He was condoning the murder of Stephen. Stephen was murdered for the cause of Christ. Now, do you think later in Paul's life, as he thought back on this occasion, do you think he said, "Yeah, but I didn't throw a stone"? He said, "I'm the chief of sinners." And he knew he might as well have thrown a stone, because he was there, and his presence, and his allowing that to happen, condoned it. He said, "It's okay." He put his stamp of approval on that. And maybe that's what we do when we go places that we just ought not go. Turn to Galatians 5. In Galatians 5, in verse 19, we read, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanliness, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousy, outburst of wrath, selfish ambition, dissensions, heresies, evil, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in past times, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom." Turn over to 1 Peter. First Peter 4. Beginning in verse 3, "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in licentiousness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." I want to look at two words in these last ones. One is revelries and the other is drinking parties. Can you go to those, not partake, not be part of that, but just attend? It doesn't say anything here about people partaking of the drink. It doesn't say any. It says the party is the problem. Be careful where you go, Christian. Be careful what you do. Turn to one more. Turn to Romans 13. "Let us walk properly," in verse 13 of Romans 13, "let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry." There we go again with revelry. "And drunkenness, not in licentiousness and lewdness, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust." Make no provision for the flesh. What does that mean? It's okay if I go. I'm keeping my nose clean while I'm there. Provision. That's a provision. Well, I'm going to go, but I'm not going to participate in what's going on. Provision. That's a provision of the flesh that you're making right there. Well, all my friends are doing that, and I run with them, and they're part of it. I'm not doing it. Provision. Make no provision for the flesh. We need to be careful. We need to be very careful what we do, where we go, and how it defines who we are. Turn to 1 Corinthians 10. In 1 Corinthians 10, beginning in verse 11, "Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the ends of the age have come. Therefore, let he who thinks he stand take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear all. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Let him who thinks he stand take heed, lest he fall. I can handle it. I can handle it. I can go and I can be part and I cannot be involved in sin. Are there any Old Testament examples of being careful lest you fall. Can you think of any? Jeff in the class yesterday mentioned David and Goliath. Goliath is a good example of that. You think Goliath thought he was going to fall? Take heed. And then later on in life, David. David, the same thing happened to David. I think in the Old Testament, I think of characters like Nebuchadnezzar. And all these kings who thought they were great. Take heed, lest you fall. What about New Testament examples? Can we think of any New Testament examples? If Peter hadn't come to your mind yet, you need to wake up. Turn to Mark 14. Peter's with the Lord, and he says in verse 29 of Mark 14, "Even if all were made to stumble, yet I will not be." Then down in verse 31, but he spoke more vehemently, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And they all said likewise. Peter said, "Not me. I'm not going to fall. I'm not going to be drawn into it. I'm not going to forsake you. Take heed." Turn over to verse 54. But Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. Peter's working himself into a situation. He's getting in a place that he just ought not be, and it's getting ready to get him. 68, but he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you are saying." Peter denies Jesus. In verse 70, but he denied it again. In verse 71, but he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." He denied it three times. This is Peter. Same chapter. He said, "I will die. I'm not going to fall into that." Peter got himself in a situation. Well, back to Lot. And let's fast forward a little bit in Genesis 18 and 19. You remember these passages that we read about where can we find 50 righteous in the land? No, we can't. Well, what about 45? What about 30? What about 10 righteous? Will you spare it for 10 righteous? 10 righteous, yes. We'll spare it. Can't find 10 righteous in the city. And then we get to the point in chapter 19 of an incredibly disturbing picture where the two angels of the Lord come to Lot. And as they're there with Lot, the people of the city come in and they demand that these men be sent out. And Lot offers his daughters to quench the lust of these men who have come. How bad has it gotten for Lot? Remember Lot standing with Abram and looking over that countryside and seeing that beautiful land? That's the land I want. That's the land I want. That's where I want to be. That's the place for me. Now look at Lot. Think that's where he wants to be? You think that's the situation that he wants to be in? Lot worked himself into a problem, didn't he? And Lot lost a great deal because of it. We also need to try to be careful. And here's a rule of thumb as we try to bring this to a close here. Anytime you're thinking about a place that you might want to go, and you pull out notes for this lesson and you kind of go through those notes and you try to kind of assess it based on what we talked about, the place and the people, and well, you know, I'm going to tell you, you probably just ought not go there. That's probably just not the place you ought to be. Because the good money is on the fact that you know the answer, but you're trying to find a way out of it. You're not going to find any loopholes in the Bible. You're going to look all day long, you can look all you want to. But the fact of the matter is, if you have to put a situation through the analysis that we're talking about right here, you probably ought just not go. because your conscience has already made the decision for you. God's given us a conscience, and that's a wonderful thing. Your conscience has probably made the decision for you, and you're looking for something to soothe that and to make it okay where you can go and you can do what you want to do, but your conscience is not going to be hurt. You're looking for justification for your change. But sometimes there is a legitimate question. And we just got to think about it. We just got to pray about it. Pray to God about it. What you're going to find out is if you know that you shouldn't go, you're going to be a little embarrassed to ask God if you should go or not. That's a big gamble too. Don't take too many chances with your soul because you might lose them. What should we do? Well, first of all, we should understand the power of influence. We should understand the power of good influence, and we should understand the power of bad influence. We should understand the power of influence on us and influence by us. And you can say this is fair, and you can say whatever you want about this, but everything that you do, everywhere that you go, everything that you say points to what you believe. It points to who you are, and it points to what you're all about. Everything that you do either condones what's going on, like Saul condoned the stoning of Stephen, or rejects it. Just like all the things that Paul rejected in his life after that. Turn to Colossians. Colossians, the third chapter. In verse 16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your heart to the Lord, and whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Do all. Turn back a couple of pages to Philippians 4. Philippians 4, beginning in verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. Do you want God with you? There it is. There's a list of things that we can do, and he goes on to say here in verse 9, the things that you received and heard and saw in me. What did we see in Paul? Did we see Paul dancing a fine line between righteousness and sin? Did we see Paul going into places that he just ought not go? Did we see Paul tempting himself at every turn? Or did we see him just walking as closely to God as he possibly could? The things that we saw in Paul. Here's another rule of thumb. If you can't envision Paul doing it, you probably ought not do it. So here we have two scenarios. One is like Lot and like these others that we mentioned, getting into a situation. And Peter, working ourselves into a situation by compromise and by questionable decisions, working ourselves into a situation. And on the other hand, do all in the name of the Lord. Meditate on these things. Act like Paul. Do the things that you see him. And there's our two options. And so I've already said, I'm not going to tell you where you ought to go and where you ought not go. But I will ask you a question. Why? Why would you even want to go somewhere where things are going on and the place is all about what you are not all about? And in fact, what you oppose. Why would you even want to be a part of that? Maybe we need to give some thoughts to ourselves. Less about our situations and more about ourselves. We need to desire what is good. We need to cleave to that. We need to hang on to that. Not too long ago, I heard a story of a CEO. This is a big wig, big guy, CEO of like a Fortune 50 company. I mean, it's one of the big companies. I can't even remember what it was. I wasn't there or anything, but I heard the story. And he was on a camping trip with some folks, some guys. And they were being guys. But he was very reserved. And the story that I was told was that they were kind of giving him a hard time and trying to kind of get him going and talking about the things that he's and just maybe trying to, he just sat there quietly. And one of them at one point said he's kind of looking around like, is there a camera here? Am I being filmed? Is somebody going to use this against me? And he probably wasn't really thinking that, but you know, guys like that have to be careful because people will take things that they say and they'll use them against them. And then you think about other important people, and they have PR folks and they have handlers, and all these things are to be sure that their image stays intact and that their image is what it ought to be. All of these things are to make sure they don't get in a situation that they don't need to be in. And if they did, it could mean their job. I'm thinking of politicians now. Has there ever been a case where a politician got out of hand and lost his job? Yeah, we all know a lot of those stories. Let me tell you something, I'm a Christian. And my soul is at stake. And I'm going to be careful. I'm going to be careful what I say. I'm going to be careful what I do. I'm going to be careful where I go. And I hope that you will too. I hope that you'll avoid putting yourself in a situation that maybe you can't even comprehend the amount of temptation that's going to be in front of you. Just avoid those situations. There's no need for them. Souls are at stake. And we need to be careful. Take out your songbook. Well, usually on question night, we don't have as strong a direction as far as encouraging people to come, but we never want to end a service without the opportunity, without an invitation being extended, the Lord's invitation, as Brother Leach talked about when he was here. We extend that invitation now. And while we talked about questions, we really talked a lot about how you ought to live. We talked first about baptism. And there's a plan that leads up to baptism. And then there's a plan that follows baptism. That's what we talked about second. It's just living a good life and doing right. Where are you? What's your condition? What's your state? If you need to make something right, let's make it right. And then let's continue on down that road. If you find yourself in a situation, if you're in Sodom and you want to get out, let's get out. Let's do that. You can do that right now. And if you find yourself in a lost condition, let's get out of that. Because that's eternal. Please come while we stand and sing.